You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Eagles fans, draft fans, if you're watching, you already know. If you're listening, well, I'll tell you, no Chris McPherson this week, but instead, we get a little more handsome, a little more hair, that's for sure, and a little more muscle here. Ladies and gentlemen, the ubiquitous Brian Baldinger, you know him from NFL Network, from Westwood One, from 97.5 The Fanatic, and most importantly, from Eagles Game Plan on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and your local ABC stations. Brian Baldinger, welcome into the studio.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. It's, how many weeks are we away now?
4 weeks.
4 weeks
four
away.
Weeks away.
4 weeks this Thursday. Yeah.
Four
so
weeks of
we're starting to hone in here.
Right.
The names are starting to kind of get familiar here. We talk about the draft and some of the potential guys that the Eagles could take.
And you are listening, of course, to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. This is Bo Wolf with Fran Duffy, along with Brian Baldinger. And Baldy, before we get into the draft stuff, we talked about all the things that you do during the season. I want you to take us through, just so the listeners can understand, just how busy your schedule is during the week. How many frequent flyer miles you're racking up.
I haven't paid for a flight in years, bro. You know? So that's good. So, you know, my trip to Costa Rica was basically free, which was nice. I needed that. But I just got done doing my taxes, you know, and I was at my accountant's office last week, and like, you know, you go to Schedule C and you're looking at the W-2s and the 1099s and all the workplaces and income.
Did you do these yourself?
No, I wouldn't try.
That's crazy.
I pay him a lot of money to do it. But there was a lot. There was eight full-time jobs here. It started at 5:30 every Monday morning over at NFL Films. We watched the Eagles game and get ready to do a show with, you know, with Brian Westbrook and Ray Dinger. And, you know, just it started at 5:30 Monday morning and it ended about Sunday night whenever I got back from a NFL game.
So Monday you've got Comcast Philly and NFL Films. Tuesday is the game plan shoot.
Wednesday morning.
Shoot.
So Tuesday you're still catching up watching film.
Monday morning we start at 5:30 and we do a radio show after that. We do Comcast, but like literally, it's just digesting what happened on Sunday.
Right.
And then Tuesday all day I'm putting playbook together for NFL Network. So I'm selecting all the shots and plays and what went right, what went wrong, what needs to change, the changes in rosters and who's in, who's out, all that stuff, just catching up on the league. So there's really not enough time, but Tuesday is about a 14-hour film day. So that's once I get through Tuesday, I kind of feel like I know what happened on Sunday.
Okay, then Wednesday's the game plan shoot.
Wednesday starts game plan, and then it's really kind of heavy into my college game that weekend. So whatever, you know, Baylor, Texas Tech, whatever it was, it's, you know, conference calls and film study on that. And then Thursday, we're kind of wrapping up college game, getting ready for NFL playbook on Friday morning, watching my tapes for playbook on Thursday. Maybe get a night's sleep.
Maybe.
Catch up. Get the bag from underneath the eyes. We start playbook. We start filming at 7 o'clock on Friday morning. Go straight through to noon. And then jump on a plane to whatever, you know, college game there is.
And then on Sunday to another NFL
game. Well, the thing is, the hard part is to get from, I don't know, Eugene, Oregon, right, or Stillwater, Oklahoma, and get to an NFL city for Sunday at 1 o'clock. So, I mean, I've taken helicopters. I've ridden the back of horses. I've been on the back of Harley Davidsons. Whatever I need to do to get to the airport or bus station on time.
So when the season's over, you usually take a couple of weeks to kind of recharge the batteries, right?
You got to decompress, Fran. You got to decompress a little bit. Try to forget, like, just get some of it, like, just
shake it out.
Empty a little bit of it out so you can fill it back up.
Right.
Yeah.
So what is your the 2 weeks when the season's over, you go away. You said
yeah.
Costa Rica. How was that?
Yeah, Costa Rica was good. Yeah, we went diving in the south, Drake Bay and, you know, some islands we dove, and then we went surfing in the north. It was good. I mean, there's no cell phones and wasn't looking at any laptops or anything. We got away. Because then, you know, if you really want to enjoy yourself, you got to get
out
of the country.
Yeah, you got to unplug.
Yeah.
I'm trying to imagine you on a surfboard, like just breaking the top of a wave.
Just imagine a condominium floating, all right? Like, they're the biggest fours possible, all right? I don't want to sink them.
Bring me a couple Mai Tais, yeah.
Well, that's, you know, we get to those.
Yeah, you get the umbrellas and the drinks.
Yes.
So then you get back. All of a sudden, you got to turn your attention to the draft. So
well, you see, you know, there's no days off anymore. I remember Art Briles at Baylor.
# no days off.
Right. I mean, literally, that's his T-shirt he wears every day. No days off.
That's great.
And you know, and Steve Sable always had this saying. The late Steve Sable always said, you know, like life is good, but football is better. And so, you know, I mean, we go from the Super Bowl now, and we go and we get ready for the combine, and then you get ready for free agency. So you take your trip, you try and schedule it in there. But really, once the combine ends, I mean, all these pro days start piling up and the evaluation process doesn't really stop. So I'm not really that big into the pro days. I know they, you know, I know it's important for certain things. I know the medical is important, certainly in evaluating a lot of these players. But I try to get most of my feeling about a player off of what he did playing college football on Saturdays.
And so what is your tape setup in terms of watching college tape? Do you go over to NFL Films?
I have my third floor office at NFL Films. Okay. So we have basically every college game. Okay. We have access to it. And then I have a computer where all the college games are downloaded. And so if I want to be mobile, if I want to be on a flight from here to LA, I can watch 5 hours of college games and entertain the entire, you know, first class section if they want
right.
to watch. Yes.
It's a sickness, man.
It's but you know, it's unbelievable. Like, you know, you were watching Lewis Nix this morning at Notre Dame.
Right.
Probably watched a game where he didn't look very good in. Yet people have him in the first round. You're like, oh, let me find a tape where he looked good.
Right.
So you're like, all right, let me go watch, you know, let me go watch Notre Dame, Michigan. All right, let me go watch, you know, Notre Dame, Alabama national champion. So you start like looking for these things. And you know, or somebody's really, really good and dominant. Like, are they really this good? Or is this just a weak opponent? Is this, you know, and so it's never enough just to watch one. You got to trust your instincts, or you just got to keep going through it.
To that point, is there anyone that you've watched that was better than you thought going in and just completely wowed you?
Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
Aaron Donald. I mean, I know he had a dominant Senior Bowl. And,
right.
But when I went back and watched him, almost in any game he played, certainly this year, anytime he got a one-on-one, he won. Like, he wasn't – like, he didn't have a bad pass rush. It was a spin. It was a rip. It was a rip club. I mean, this kid knows how to rush the passer. Now, people may not like his size or whatever, but the defense tackle, Pitt, he blew me away. And then, really, Anthony Barr. Anthony Barr has played outside linebacker for 2 years. He was a running back. His dad played here with me in Philadelphia. For playing outside linebacker for 2 years, when I watch him, I'm blown away by just how – fluid he looks and smooth he is.
I'm very interested to hear your take on Anthony Barr, because it sounds like sort of the draft consensus right now is that he's slipping a little bit. But this is a guy who during the season was considered a likely top five pick. He has all that upside, and everybody knows he's raw. I'm interested. I'm glad to hear.
Yeah,
you know,
it's interesting. Like, I played with a great linebacker here in Willie Thomas out of Texas A&M. Played 10-11 years in the league. I never saw Willie Thomas ever on the ground. He was like a cat. Like, if you cut him, he landed on his feet. If you blindsided him, he was never on the uniform, never got dirty. And when I want, you know, like, I always think, like, scouting is a study of movement. And then eventually, if you watch somebody long enough, they should remind you of somebody. So when I watch Anthony Barr, he reminds me of Willie Thomas, bigger and even faster, more athletic. But you never see him on the ground. And this is a guy, like I said, 2 years. I can just imagine if he really is a student of the game. 2 years from now, what he could be. And that's what you have to think about when you look at these guys. What are they going to be?
Todd McShay from ESPN said this week that he was going through some defensive line prospects, projecting the best fit for them in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And Anthony Barr, he had to the Eagles. Now, I think it would be a surprise if he fell to 22. But
well,
you could see a scenario where the Eagles move up. And certainly Chip Kelly is familiar with Anthony Barr.
Well, I know Billy McGovern went out to the outside linebacker coach, went out and worked him out at UCLA, and it was funny because I did a show, Path to the Draft, at NFL Network. It was either last week or the week before Mike Mayock was on. And so me and Mike were debating what the Eagles should do at 22. So I said, look, and I didn't preface this to Mike before the show started. So during the show, I said, look, Mike, what if this scenario happens? What if there's a run on the wide receivers? What if there's a run on the quarterbacks? What if there's a run on the offensive tackles, and all of a sudden Anthony Barr gets by Tennessee, all right? And there he is at, say, 15 or 16,
yeah.
And Eagles are at 22. Now, I know, I'm well aware that they only have their 6 draft picks. They don't have a lot of ammunition. But if that's your biggest glaring need, and to me, the right outside linebacker position would complete this 3-4 defense in some ways, I'm like, why wouldn't you be aggressive? And, you know, Mike can answer with, he's not going to be there at 16. I'm like, okay. Maybe it's not. And the Eagles don't have enough ammunition. But to your point, Bo, what if that does, what if there's this Khalil Mack is gone? They have run on these different positions that we see from year to year. And what if Anthony Barr is just on this little free-for-all? Only because positions of need or other players fit these other teams better.
You never
like
know.
You'd have to pick up the phone
right.
and inquire to see. You know, I mean, the Miami Dolphins jumped up in front of the Eagles last year thinking that might take Deion Jordan. They went a long ways to get to number 3 to take Deion Jordan.
Yeah.
So this can happen, and to me, I would love that scenario and to see what the Eagles might do.
And you look back in years past, I mean, a couple of years ago, we didn't think the Eagles had any shot at Fletcher Cox,
right,
getting out of the top eight, and he ended up coming down to 12.
Same with Jeremy Maclin.
Jeremy Maclin as well, same thing. So, I mean, once draft day happens, anything can happen.
No one thought Sherif Floyd was going to fall last year. There's always a guy.
And the only thing that gives me pause to that scenario is that you have Clowney, you have Mac, and you have Barr, and after that, there's a big fall.
Right.
So you wonder if one of those teams, obviously the Eagles wouldn't be the only team looking to jump up to get Barr. So that would be the only thing that I would say would keep that from happening. But it's definitely possible, for sure.
Yeah, but you could make a case that maybe Houston takes Bortles, and maybe maybe Greg Robinson or Sammy Watkins goes to St. Louis, and there's Jacksonville on the clock, and of course they probably jump on Clowney at that point. And so maybe the run on those guys starts late, And like they said, it's not a knock on Clowney. It wouldn't be a knock on somebody else if they decide. If, right there Tampa says, the best player available is, Jake Matthews. We're going to jump on Jake Matthews because we don't see an opportunity to draft a guy like this for the next couple of years. Those things happen in any draft.
I think you touched on it before. I think the wide receiver position is going to be so interesting how it plays out in the first round, because there are nine guys who are first round quality receivers in a vacuum in a normal year. So maybe after Mike Evans goes, maybe teams decide to wait on a receiver because they think they can get one at the top of the second round. Or maybe someone takes Marquise Lee early and then everybody else starts picking off those next guys like Odell Beckham and Brandon Cooks.
Well, maybe Brandon Cooks becomes this year's Tavon Austin. I mean, Tavon was the eighth pick, and we'd never seen a player that size drafted that high before. Obviously, St. Louis had a couple first-round picks last year, but Tavon Austin, he was probably overdrafted to some degree. I loved him. I mean, I didn't have any problem with him. I asked Howie about him where the Eagles were picking last year. Would you take this guy at four? I thought that highly of him at the time. But, if somebody is in love with Brandon Cooks, and I'm sure somebody's going to be. I mean, there's a lot of reason to be in love with that guy.
It'll be interesting to see just where that run starts, though. Like I said, either three guys are going to go in that first round, or it could be eight or nine. So it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out.
Talk a little bit about the draft buzz. And speaking of those wide receivers, one of the things we already mentioned, Todd McShay, he says that he thinks Marquise Lee is going to slip a little bit in this year's draft. Where do you have him in your wide receiver rankings, Fran?
Well, obviously, it all depends on what
you're looking
for,
exactly,
what your scheme is. So ranking these guys, you're kind of splitting hairs when you're talking about all these receivers. But he's a guy, when I watch him, he kind of reminds me of Jeremy Maclin. Just the way that he moves, the way he catches the ball, obviously the yards after catchability. I think at 22, it would be a great fit. So I guess it depends on where Todd thinks he should go in regards to what he thinks would be falling for Marquise Lee. But obviously, coming here, I think he'd be a great fit. And obviously, Chip Kelly had a good look at him at Oregon.
Well, I think if the draft was 2 years ago, Marquise Lee probably would have been, top 10.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they lose Robert Woods this year. He goes to Buffalo. Really good player up there in Buffalo. They love him. Second round pick and going to be there a long time. And so obviously the quarterback wasn't there. He wasn't what Matt Barkley was, and the left tackle's gone. So there's been a depletion of talent at USC, coaching change, all this stuff. And it seems like, and then Marquise Lee was nicked a little bit.
Knee injury, yep.
So he wasn't the same player this year as he was 2 years ago. I mean, USC was the number one team in the nation coming in, and he had a big buzz, and a little bit like Matt Barkley after his junior year. He probably would have been drafted much higher, probably first round versus fourth round. So, but does that diminish the player? Is he a different player now than he was? To me, I don't see how he could be a lesser player. He just had two more years of college games. So I still think he's a bona fide talent. He's going to be taken in the first round. Probably will be on or around the board when the Eagles pick at 22. I don't know that that's still the biggest position of need right now. I think really the Eagles are in a position that if they just stay there 22, whoever the best player on the board is going to be is probably the player that's going to come off the board.
Well, and that's what Howie's been preaching all offseason, all the last 2 years, best player available. And in a draft
well.
Like this, I think that's you certainly hold.
Well, just judging Bo by what they did in free agency, they filled all their immediate holes by either signing their old play, their own players, and then adding the additions that they've done. And even with the subtraction of DeSean Jackson, I guess we should mention DeSean Jackson, we're talking about the draft, because it affects what the Eagles do. But I don't think just because you lose a player of that magnitude, and what was their best wide receiver a year ago? I don't think you're in a position where you go, we have to take a receiver in the first round. Because it's the deepest draft in wide receivers that we've seen in a long time, or whatever else. I mean, I just think at 22, if they're just staying there and they let the draft come to them, you know, whoever's that next player off the board, I wouldn't be surprised if that's just the player that the Eagles take.
It's about replacing that production that you lose with DeSean Jackson. So you have Macklin coming back. You have the addition of Darren Sproles. You have the development of Zach Ertz, the development of the relationship between Riley Cooper and Nick Foles. You think between, you know, those four things, you're going to replace 80-plus catches, 1,000-plus yards at some point. And that's obviously not factoring in who they're going to add on draft day.
Yeah. And I think Ertz is the guy who a lot of people aren't necessarily thinking about, who is going to be one of the guys to take a next big step in this offense.
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, I mentioned, I think part of their philosophy here is they want big, freakish athletes. And when you watch Zach run, I mean, he's so fluid. He's so smooth. He runs like a wide receiver. And he beat a lot of one-on-one coverage last year, you know, in the middle of the field. And he catches everything. So, I mean, I think that usually, I always think that you make your biggest jump as an NFL player between your first year and your second year. So, you know, last year at this time, he was, you know, trying to finish his credits at Stanford. And now he's got a year under his belt, and starting this week, he'll be in here, you know, starting to work with Nick. And I just think that that's a relationship that has a lot of growth to it. But, you know, you don't replace 82 catches and 1,300 yards, like, in a day.
Of course not.
You replace it at the end of a season, and then you add it up. So those passes are going to go to somebody, and somebody's going to catch them. Who they go to, it's we've seen around here, it's week to week. Yep. It just depends on who they're playing and what the game plan is.
And I think the flip side to that is as much as we all love Jason Avant, I think that while maybe production-wise you're losing a little bit on the outside with DeSean, there's more to come from that slot receiver position, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and we talked, Zach Ertz moved around all over the place, whether he was outside by himself, whether he was in the slot, in line, in the backfield. I mean, he was lined up everywhere. Between the rest of these guys, Darren Sproles, we saw a guy, Chris Polk, last year, who they moved into the slot. You would think that Darren Sproles is going to see some of those
looks. If you look at just the playoff game against the Saints, January 4th, I mean, Sproles had four catches in that game, and they were all at receiver, either split all the way out or in the slot. And so, I mean, I honestly believe one of the reasons why DeSean is not here is he could not run a pivot route. He couldn't run a narrow route. He couldn't win one-on-one in the middle of the field. He could win with the speed, straight speed, but – you know, the separation that you need to win in short area type quickness, that's what Sproles has. And so I expect him to run a lot of those kind of routes.
Are there any receivers who you've watched in this draft and maybe in the second round area who can run those routes, who can win in those routes?
Well, my favorite player in that role, and I don't even think he's the second round. I think he's more third round and maybe fourth, is Mike Campanaro out of Wake Forest.
Baldy, you are hitting me right now.
You like
right
Mike.
In the
this
heart.
Wasn't scripted.
I'm a Wake Forest guy. This was not scripted. I've been talking Campanaro. I know you're a Duke guy, so he must have really jumped out at you.
Well, here's what happened. I'll be honest with you. I did not watch one Wake Forest game during a year.
My
nephew, who loves football, is a football player. He went. So he was his high school's, you know, games are on Friday night. His dad took him to a Wake Forest game this year, and he fell in love with Mike Campanaro. Like, he met him after the game, and he loved the kid, and he had a dominant game that day. I forget who they played. So I started watching Campanaro tape, and I'm like, this guy is – you want Wes Welker? This guy's Wes Welker. Like, he had a great pro day. He's a 4.46. I mean, there's not an underneath route that he can't run. And he's great after the catch, and he's a great kid.
Yep.
So to me, he's clean as a whistle, and he can play.
You are listening to the Michael Campanaro podcast presented by AAA. Baldy, I've been talking up Campanaro all year long, and this is completely unbiased. Baldy comes in throwing the love at Mike Campanaro. I love it. This has made my
well, the only thing is, like, you know, he's not going to go in the first round or probably the second
not.
Because of his height, and then he's not really an outside receiver.
Small
although,
hands was
yeah,
one
so,
of the
but knocks. if you covet that slot receiver position, which a lot of teams do, you know, a lot of teams like to move guys in and out of there. But if you said, okay, you know, like – Denver does with Wes Welker or Amendola in New England. If you said, okay, this is our slot receiver, it's a separate position. He may not start, but he's going to play 35, 40 plays a game, then that's your guy.
Baldy, talk about a guy who you saw quite a bit in the fall, who's a different kind of slot receiver, but obviously brings his own set of skills, Tevin Reese from Baylor.
Well, the one thing about Reese is it's flat-out speed. Now, I know you run these 40s and these 20s and these splits and everything like that, but he just looks fast, friend. I know the guys ran faster than him, but if you just look right now, and I work with Sterling Sharp, who was one of the great receivers in our league. He loves Baylor receivers. I mean, they know what's behind them. They know how to come back to the ball. They run great routes. And if you look at the run on Baylor receivers over the last couple of years, Art Briles done a fantastic job of recruiting speed and developing that speed into real receivers. And for me, Tevin Reese right now is a guy that a lot of people aren't talking about, but extremely productive, albeit in a real pure spread offense. But I think this guy has short area quickness. I think he can stutter and go. I think he can run routes. And I think he's a very polished player.
I think it's an interesting group where he's going to kind of fall in that tier with, you know, DeAnthony Thomas and Robert Heron from Wyoming, another guy we saw down at the Senior Bowl. You know, Josh Huff obviously is a different kind of player, but Bruce Ellington, TJ Jones, a lot of these guys, you know, are going to fit into that day three range just because of how stacked it is up front. But Reese is a guy who can impress some people.
Eagles fans are always asking about DeAnthony Thomas, paying a lot of attention to him because they know what he did in Chip Kelly's offense. Have you had a chance to watch DeAnthony?
Yeah, and I actually thought, you know, I mean, the surprise to me was how he ran. I really thought he was going to be low 4.4s, maybe even 4.3, and he was in a high 4.5s. So his speed surprised me because when you watch him at Oregon, you just thought he was the fastest player on the field every weekend. Now, maybe he's one of those guys that just plays faster, but – you know, I mean, Chip, that was one of the great recruiting wars. I mean, he was scheduled to go to USC, and next thing you know, he's in Eugene. And, you know, the thing about DeAnthony Thomas, he's a running back that plays receiver. So he's got a different skill set than a lot of these other guys. I mean, you could put him in the backfield now, and he could be your third down back. But he's very strong. He's a great returner. He may end up becoming a better pro than he was a college player. I mean, if that's possible.
And when you're balancing that evaluation, when you get his timed 40 time versus his game speed tape, what do you put more credence in?
I put more in the – well, like if you watch him, he never really did much against Stanford. Like, if you ever want to watch any Pac-12 player, watch him against Stanford's defense. Stanford's defense looks like an NFL defense, and they got a lot of talent, and they do a lot of things that you see NFL teams do. I mean, they're just very advanced. So even if you want to run four wide receivers against Stanford, nobody puts up big numbers against him. So when you watch him, like against Stanford, he never really did much. He wasn't, you know, they took him away, you know, and they always had a body on him. And so he didn't get these open spaces and these alleys, you know, these moving sidewalks where it's just a path to the end zone. You don't see those plays against Stanford.
If you allow us to flip sides of the ball to the defensive side, you mentioned this a little bit earlier about how if the Eagles can sort of solve that right outside linebacker position with Anthony Barr that completes the defense, some Eagles fans might point the arrow at finding another safety there. What is it in terms of the state of the Eagles defense that makes right outside linebacker the priority?
Well, I mean, Trent Cole played very well last year. He got his 8 sacks in the last 8 games, actually, you know, in 4 of those last 8 games. He got his 8 sacks. So he got numbers. But he played very hard. He was a much better player at that position than I thought he would be. So I don't want to take anything away from, you know, everything that he accomplished last year. But eventually, if you're going to be a 3-4 defense, you need an outside linebacker, a true outside linebacker, where you're not just playing to his strengths every play. You're dropping him into curl flat coverage, and you're having him run with the tight ends, and you're doing all these things. And somebody that has range and athletic ability, where if you don't want to give your coverage away against, you know, slot personnel, you can walk your right outside linebacker out there in that slot player, and you got your safeties deep, and you can still play zone, and you don't have to give away your coverage and what you're doing.
Is there any safeties coming out that, you know, really catch your eye?
There's a bunch of them. I mean, people are talking about Clinton Dix out of Alabama, obviously, and Calvin Pryor, and rightfully so, but I love Deion Buchanan out of Washington State. This is a guy that is a very good tackler. He's a big hitter. But he's got 15 interceptions in 3 years. He picked off Chip Kelly 3 times. I like Deion Buchanan. I love Ahmad Dixon out of Baylor. He is a great hitter. I think he knows how to play the game. So I think he's very coachable. I like him a lot. I mean, I like those two guys a bunch.
Buchanan is a guy who the Eagles are reportedly interested in, have brought him in or are bringing him in for a visit here. So that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, and both Buchanan and Dixon are very, you know, similar players in that, you know, you're probably your more traditional strong safeties, but they both have shown the ability to play as a deep safety and play sideline to sideline, show good range. Have you watched Deion Bailey? Because he's a guy who kind of got a lot of buzz when he first declared out of USC. Mm-hmm. Played linebacker his first 2 years, played more safety this year, except when, you know, when I watched him, played a lot in the slot. And as a former linebacker in the slot, there was some interesting things that you see. And I, you know, I don't know what his exact role is at the next level. Is that something you saw too?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's the first thing you notice from the safety position. You just don't find many guys that are going – you almost have to now in college football. But yeah, if they can go out there and be a good defender in that position, it just gives you such more versatility. I mean, we all want our safeties to be you can't use the phrase headhunters anymore, so I'll be politically correct. I mean, you want big hitters back there. Yeah. You want people thinking twice about going across the middle and being able to, you know, lower the wood. But, you know, when I watch Bailey, I mean, he's a guy that did go out there, had showed versatility. And I think that's what catches an evaluator's eyes right now when they can do that.
Are there any other mid-round safeties that you like, Fran?
Well, you know, the one guy that's getting a little bit of buzz right now, too, is Shane Vereen's little brother, Brock Vereen, out of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Guy who's played some corner, played some safety, had to move back to corner this year because of injury. Just a real fluid kid, showed some versatility, showed the ability to come up and lay a hit on you, showed the ability to play deep, showed the ability to hang in man coverage. One of those versatile players that I think could fit in a number of different roles for a defense.
The last guy who I liked at the Shrine game, and this is tough for me and probably even tougher for Baldy, but Trey Boston from North Carolina is a guy who I think shows that same versatility, but I don't like to give love to a UNC guy.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, Carolina Blue.
Yeah,
you
it's
we're
tough.
We're taught to not like those people. But
you're bordering on Carolina Blue here, this shirt.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, though, when I put it on today. Let's see. If you really evaluate the safeties in this league right now, there's not many mid to lower round draft picks playing safety. There just isn't. I mean, this is a position that's slowly being stocked by high draft picks because the measurables are important now. If you really can't run, you can't flip your hips, you can't cover very well, you get exposed. And once you get exposed, I don't care what the player's mentality is. Once you get exposed, it's hard to A, hide that, and then your confidence goes. Your confidence goes as a player when you start getting picked on.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because it used to be in the past that people would say, oh, you can wait to draft a safety later rounds. And the thinking was that, you know, they're interchangeable, you can kind of plug and play. I think it's partly because of the evolution of the tight end position, what teams are doing with slot receivers and multi-receiver sets now. You have to have guys who are able to hang in coverage back there on the back end.
And because safety is such an important position, college defenses, defensive coordinators, and coaches are putting their best athletes at the position.
Yeah, and then you're seeing a lot of corners that are starting to make that transition now. You know, Desmond Southward from Wisconsin's a guy. Mark Weston Huff from Wyoming. Right. We talked about Brock Vereen. Jamay Thomas from Georgia Tech. A lot of these guys who were corners have seen a lot of time at corner making that transition.
Well, the only thing I'd say is, since obviously when you win a Super Bowl, you have to talk about what they're doing. But Cam Chancellor was a fifth-round pick out of Virginia Tech. Linebacker size. And when you watch how Seattle, what Dan Quinn now is doing, what Gus Bradley did before, is their style of defense really allowed – I think if Cam Chancellor went to another team, he wouldn't be nearly as effective. I mean, they literally funnel everything from the slot receiver inside, into the middle of the field. And then they play that robber coverage where he drops down and basically he's there just to be a free hitter, you know, and Earl Thomas behind him or vice versa. And so – you never see Cam Chancellor walk out on the slot receiver. Like, he's not put in that position. I'm not saying they're covering for him, but he's not in that position. And he has gotten better. Now, he's in his fourth year in the league, but he gradually got better and better. They liked him for his hitting and his range. And so I would think everybody out there scouting safeties right now is looking for a guy with that sort of length and size that could be that you could adjust your defense to fit those skills.
It's all about fit. It's all about, you know, making sure you bring somebody in who's going to fit what you want on your defense. You know, we talked about it with Malcolm Jenkins. I mean, he's a better fit for what you're looking at here.
Well, I mean, for the Eagles now, I mean, Boykin is a great fit for this defense. I mean, he is a true slot defender. That's his specialty right now. Yeah, he would love to probably compete for an outside position, but really at 5'10", you're just not going to get a lot of chances out there. So, like, they found a fit for him, and he is a very, very good player. And I think a guy that's going to be here for a long time, but that's an example of a defense fitting a guy's skill set.
And it's like, you know, we talked about Buchanan. Buchanan's a guy that you're not going to say, okay, you're going to go in the slot and play man coverage 35 snaps a game. You're not going to do that with him. But if you you know, have him play in the box or as a center fielder because he's shown that sideline to sideline range. That's a place where, you know, he could have some success. But it's all about getting those guys in who could fit your scheme, and then once they're here, just making sure you put them in that role.
As we keep going through the draft buzz, we talked about some of the reported visits. We've talked already last week about Mike Evans, Kelvin Benjamin, Cody Latimer, some wide receivers. Adam Kaplan, our old friend today, reporting that the Eagles are bringing in a offensive lineman who we saw at the Shrine game, Fran, and I'm going to give a shout-out to my middle school French teacher, Madame Cher, here, as I pronounce with my dirty French accent, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif.
He's out of McGill in Canada. Adam McGill.
The Harvard of Canada?
Yes. Yes. He's 6'5", 350 pounds. Big kid.
And obviously, it makes sense for a guy who was playing at that level of competition. You want to see him up close. You want to take a look at him.
You got a closer look at him at St. Pete. Wasn't invited to the combine, but you want to take a closer look.
But I think the bigger picture here is that as much as the offensive line was the strength of the Eagles offense this year, you're looking at guys who are 3 out of 5 over the age of 30. At some point, that roster has to turn over. And we like guys, in theory, we like Dennis Kelly, Matt Tobin, Alan Barber, who's a little bit older, those guys, but we haven't seen them on the field. I think at some point, the Eagles have to bring in some kind of new blood there on the offensive line.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you always want to be able to supplement the back end of your roster through the draft. So, you know, whether that comes with these late round guys or these developmental guys, you look at some of them. You know, Matt Tobin was undrafted free agent. Dennis Kelly was a 5th round pick.
Right.
You're going to supplement the back end of your
Jason
roster.
Jason Kelsey, 6th round pick.
Exactly. So, you know, you want to try and develop some of those guys and get them into your culture, get them into your weight room, and continue to develop them.
And Baldy, what is it when you watch this Eagles offensive line, if you're evaluating a college prospect? What are the traits that you're looking for to see whether they would fit the Eagles?
Well, I mean, their athleticism. I mean, if you watch Lane Johnson last year, I mean, he was the best tackle. I mean, I thought he was the best rookie in the NFL last year. Now, that's subjective, is up to debate. But, I mean, he started and played every game, played every snap of every game. And what you see is rare athletic ability. And so they made the right pick last year. But, you watch Kelsey out there in the perimeter. I mean, he's blocking guys outside the numbers. Jason Peters, is pulling and leading sweeps and outside zone plays. So, this is an offensive line that wants to stretch your defense. And so you got to be able to, your backside blocks are as important as your front side blocks. And so you got to be able to run. I mean, there's just a day that you could just be, a 5'5", 40 guy and playing in this offense. I don't see it. And really, when you talk about spread offenses, I mean, we always think about receivers spreading out and how many receivers on the field. But really what happens is it really makes it a one-on-one game across the board. Your center is one-on-one with the nose tackle. Kelsey is as good as there is right now in this business. But, you're Evan Mathis right now. You're getting a lot of one-on-one blocks. You're not getting a true slide protection in this offense the way it's constructed. So you got to be able to, if you think that, typically, defensive linemen have always been so much more athletic than offensive linemen. Well, that gets exposed in this true spread offense.
Have there been any guys during your tape study? I mean, I know when I've been watching, Joel Batonio out of Nevada was a guy who kind of stood out as someone, a former left tackle, is probably going to slide in to play guard, but good athleticism, can move well laterally, can play in space. Are there any other guys that have stood out to you when you're watching?
Well, I know this guy is being projected high, but I don't think he's going to go in the first round. But Antonio Richardson, up there at Tennessee, I mean, this is a guy that has got massive size. And while he didn't run that great, I mean, he can move. He can slide now. I mean, you don't want to watch him against Jadeveon Clowney, but, I mean, he can cover people up. And he looks like a guy that knows how to kick slide, keep his feet underneath him, stay on his feet. I mean, he kind of jumps off the page at you. But let me just think if there's –
how about the UCLA kid, Xavier Suofilo?
Yeah,
another guy who played left tackle, has some experience out there on the edge, but a lot of people see as a guard. Obviously, moves really well for a guy his size.
He does. Now, he did spend 2 years in a Mormon mission, so I think he's going to be maybe a 24-year-old rookie. He played as a freshman there.
Crosses him off my list.
Huh?
Crosses him off my list.
We've seen that before.
I do not want old guys.
Yeah.
Because you're playing – think about it. A 24-year-old playing against a 20-year-old, it's a completely different body.
But I think Xavier is a plug-and-play guy. Like, you're going to get value for him in this first contract the next 4 years.
But we have heard that before.
Yeah, but that was a guy that really didn't play a lot of football.
Yeah, that's right. Fair.
This guy's played a lot. I think the game's important to him. Even after going away for 2 years, I mean, what you're going to get is a really mature guy. So you're not going to get immaturity. I think he's very coachable. And look, this is, look, the Eagles led the league in rushing last year. I mean, I expect them to lead the league in rushing every year. And you need guys that can move players one-on-one, not just blocking them one-on-one pass block. I mean, you need guys that can move people off the line of scrimmage, and this is one of those guys that can do that.
Baldy, where do you stand on the debate between Jake Matthews and Greg Robinson? I know personally I prefer Matthews as a guy, you know, can play any of the positions along the offensive line. Great hand placement, great feet. Robinson obviously is much more imposing guy and can blow you off the ball. But where do you stand with that?
Well,
debate?
prior to last year's draft, when the Eagles took Lane Johnson, I wouldn't have even looked at Greg Robinson over Jake Matthews ever. But then after watching Lane, who had only played the position for 2 years, watched how impressive he was, you go, this athletic ability, the ability to be able to slide, recover, cut off on the backside the way Lane can. Like, I'm thinking, you know what? Now more than ever, this is really important to be able to do that. And Greg is more athletic like that than Jake. Now, Jake is an unbelievable technician. I think he's only going to get stronger. I think he's going to be a 10-year player, easily 10-year player, much like, you know, his dad. But, well, all of a sudden, you start putting a lot more emphasis on athleticism than you used to. And so that's why I go, even though I know Greg isn't a polished pass blocker, I know that he can be. He reminds me of Marcus McNeil coming out of Auburn. And then he was knocked down a little bit because of a back condition that ended up ending his career. But for 4 years, he started every single game at San Diego, and he was a bookend, blindsided protector of Phillip Rivers in San Diego. And I think Greg Robinson could be all of that.
And it's another case where, you know, fit becomes incredibly important, because if you're going to draft a guy like Greg Robinson, you're hoping at least that the run game is
central
to your
offense.
You're
going to be one of those teams at the top of that run-pass ratio, the way Seattle, San Francisco, Washington, Philadelphia are, where you're running it more than you're throwing it. And then you want to be able to take advantage of his skill set, which is basically being able to crush the entire side of the defensive line.
Yeah. Final draft buzz thing I want to go through is our Fandemonium columnist, Tommy Lawler, debuted his first mock draft of the year, and that he goes through all six picks for the Eagles, all seven rounds. Tell me whether this draft, if this is how it works out come May, would make you happy. First round, Tommy's got us taking Kyle Fuller, the cornerback from Virginia Tech.
Love Kyle Fuller. The guy who's played, you know, played safety, played corner, played slot. I don't know if you've watched him against Georgia Tech in that triple option offense, but he was a bulldog in the run game in that game. Obviously, he's got the lineage. He's got two brothers who's played in the league. He's got another one coming up, mm-hmm. a true freshman. Just a guy who's incredibly versatile, one of the top corners in the draft for sure.
Well, I mean, if the Eagles took Kyle Fuller, I wouldn't be disappointed at all. Yeah. I mean, to me, even with picking up Nolan Carroll, who I think is a really good player and a good fit for this defense, you need four corners. You just do. You're going to use all four. You're going to play four. And I'm not putting Boykin in that category because I think he's a special position. But I think you need four, and I wouldn't have any problem taking a player – at 22 of that caliber.
All right, second round, Tommy, addresses the wide receiver position, and we've talked about this guy in the past, big, ultra-productive in college. We saw him at the Senior Bowl, Jordan Matthews from Vanderbilt. Now, he does have a few issues. He has some drops occasionally, and they do feed him in the screen game a lot, which may actually portend well for a fit in the Eagles' offense.
Yeah, I mean, he showed the ability to make plays after the catch, and obviously he's a guy who has shown the ability to be a threat down the field and going up and getting the football. Didn't run particularly well, isn't the best athlete, but at least he has shown the ability to be able to win in contested situations. So, interesting guy.
Well, when I put Jordan Matthews on, I forget which game I watched Vanderbilt in first. Maybe it was Missouri. But anyways, there's an interception on the third play of the game. And so before he's ever run a route, he's taken on the defensive player with the interception, and he literally blindsides and cold cocks him. And I said, that's a football player. Like, there won't be any sideline blowups in Minnesota with Jordan Matthews over not chasing an interception. I like everything about Jordan Matthews. If he was there in the second round, I think he fills the need. He certainly has the size, and I think he is a very good athlete.
All right, third round, Tommy goes with Marcus Smith, the outside linebacker from Louisville.
That's another versatile kid. I mean, he played – you're talking about a guy who played as a three-point defensive end, played as a two-point pass rusher on the edge, played as a stacked linebacker in odd fronts, plays as a three technique and some sub packages, a guy who's done it all for Louisville. Really interesting kid, can show that he can bend on the edge, has a variety of pass rush moves. Getting him in the third round, I think, would be pretty good value.
When I watch pass rushers in college, the only move I'm really looking to see if they can do, can you collapse the pocket? Can you convert speed to power?
Yep.
And can you, I mean, one of my favorite players in this league is Cameron Wake. And I don't care if it's play one or play 65. That guy takes his right arm, he stabs the right tackle, and he walks that tackle back to the quarterback's lap consistently. He doesn't lose power during a game. And that's what I look for in these college kids. Now, the one thing about these mock drafts is, okay, Marcus Smith, I don't have a problem with Marcus. But who else is on the board?
Right.
You know, that's the only issue that I would have. But that's what I'm looking. Can a guy collapse the pocket? Because really, that is almost as effective as sacking a quarterback.
There was a play I remember down at the Senior Bowl. It might have been Wednesday practice. And it was a team drill. And Marcus Smith just, you know, first step, showing speed. And then he converts to power and just runs over Michael Schofield, the tackle from Michigan. And when I saw that, it was one of those plays where it's like, you know, that sticks in your memory. Mm-hmm. Showed the ability to be able to do that. So I would be pretty happy with Marcus Smith in round three.
Well, another player who impressed us at the Senior Bowl, and this is my favorite pick of Tommy's mock, is the defensive end from Virginia. Well, defensive lineman in our 3-4 defense, it'd be a defensive end. Brent Urban, the tall Canadian. I know we don't take too kindly to Canadian draft picks these days, but I like Brent Urban a lot, and I think he fits a good position in this defense for sure.
Have you watched him against Oregon?
Yeah. No, not against Oregon.
There was a game against they played Oregon this year, and he was really, really impressive.
Okay.
Showed the ability to stock and shed, really showed the ability to be a two-gap lineman. Has a lot to work on technique-wise, but obviously has the frame you want at that position.
All right, fifth round. We've been talking about these middle-round safeties. Isaiah Lewis from Michigan State, we haven't talked about him yet. He's a little bit smaller, but he was certainly part of one of the best defenses in college football this year.
Absolutely. I mean, there was a unit that –
Well, I mean, I think Darquise Dennard is going to be the first corner off the board.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt.
You're a big Dennard fan. Tell us about him.
Well, when you watch Darquise, first of all, he is a press man corner, meaning he's going to be right in face of any receiver he plays. The technique never really changes, and the game doesn't change. He plays up in your numbers the whole game. Now, if you watch him against Notre Dame, he almost single-handedly won the Notre Dame game in the fourth quarter. He made every tackle. Blew up third and one plays. I mean, he's physical. But, I mean, when you watch him, you think you're watching an NFL player. You think you're watching a true gifted press man corner, the way Rex Ryan plays it, the way Patrick Peterson plays it in Arizona, the way Richard Sherman plays it in Seattle. And what I love about him is a lot of these guys show you press man, okay, and then they bail as soon as the ball snapped, or they never get your hands on you, or they guess. They jump inside or jump outside on you. This guy stays square until you declare where you're going, and then he turns his hips. To me, already, he's got flawless technique. And if you add in the fact that he has no fear making every tackle, like, I think you get the complete player now. And I think, I mean, just in the Notre Dame game, he probably defended four or five balls, deep balls, where Notre Dame looked like they wanted to go after him, and they didn't have any success.
One of the things, you watch him and you see the ball's in the air, he does not panic.
No, doesn't panic.
He does not lose technique whatsoever. That's probably his most redeeming quality to me, is that, you know, he knows how to play the ball in the air and, you know, really stood out in that area. And obviously with Isaiah Lewis, just a high motor, physical safety, come down and hit you, was versatile, played a number of different roles, came down and played linebacker in sub packages. Interesting kid, and we saw him down at the Senior Bowl, and he played pretty well.
All right, finally, we are going to go to the Scouts Notebook feature on the inside linebackers. But before we go there, Baldy, when you're looking for inside linebackers, especially in this defense, this 3-4 defense, in today's NFL, what skills are you looking for?
Well, the one thing that you can't find very much in college is you're just trying to find somebody that can play downhill and not just skate, because can they get off a block? That's what I'm looking at some of these guys to do, because they're not asked to, unless you're playing Auburn, you know, and you're C.J. Mosley and you're playing Auburn, okay, you got to do that against Auburn. But there's just not that many offenses you're playing where you're forced to come and take on a fullback. You know, give yourself up. You know, a lot of these guys, you know, you got the A-gap, go take the A-gap. Somebody else is in the B-gap. You know, do your job. You don't see that very much.
All right, and with that, the wonderful Scouts Notebook feature edited by none other than Fran Duffy himself. They talk about the inside linebackers.
You know, something that we really came up with when I was with the Baltimore Ravens is defensively, and really it carried over to the offensive players as well, we put a premium on speed, toughness, and instincts. And, you know, can a player run? Is he tough? And does he have a natural feel for the game? Because we felt like that any player that could check off those three boxes, our coaches would be able to maximize that ability in our offensive or defensive system.
When you look at inside linebackers, and again, it doesn't matter whether you're talking about 3-4-4-3. You're essentially talking about stacked linebackers behind the defensive line.
These are linebackers that height might not matter as much. When you look at Zach Thomas or London Fletcher, Ray Lewis was a shade over 6 feet in Baltimore when we drafted him. But I think that is the position where speed, toughness, instincts probably matter more than any others, because there's an instinctive nature to having a lot of traffic and a lot of things happening and finding the football.
You look to see how they sort of work through bodies and traffic, because sometimes they're not going to be blocked straight on, but there's a lot of bodies there. They're going to have to figure out a way, without giving up their gap integrity and their gap responsibility, they're going to have to figure out a way to work through bodies and find the ball carrier.
Not only can you cover sideline to sideline, but it's also working through trash, because a lot of these guys can get sealed off, or sometimes they're going to have a free line. The question is, can you sustain backfield vision? And I think that's very important, because you don't want to have a lot of wasted steps. And if you can keep that backfield vision, see through those blockers and know where you're going, you can get out in front and you can chase down from the backside.
You take a look at a guy like a Luke Kuechly, who's got size, he's got speed, but rarely does a big body engulf him because he's so quick to the football. He beats those guys to the ball. He'll get under them, he'll get over them. He doesn't get caught on the big bodies. And when you get stuck on a big body, it's all over.
They're going to have to take on blocks at some point. And whether it's fullback blocks in an ISO lead run game, whether it's offensive line blocks in a power or zone run game, they're going to have to take on blocks. Now, different guys take on blocks differently. Some guys beat it with quickness and hand movement and feet movement.
You want to be able to use your athletic ability. The last thing you want to do if you're a weak side linebacker that's 220 pounds and become engaged with a 240 pound fullback or a 250 pound tight end. So you got to be able to avoid and not let them get into you. And if they do, use your athletic ability to quickly disengage.
A Lavonte David for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You're not going to get caught up hand fighting with offensive linemen. You're only 228 pounds. They will likely win that. So you have to defeat that with your quickness of movement. If you're a different kind of linebacker, a Dante Hightower, he's not that kind of player. He's 255 pounds. So when you watch him, you know he's not going to win with dynamic quickness. So you have to see how he takes on blocks.
There's a toughness factor when you've got 310-pound offensive guards coming up on you when you're a 245-pound Mike linebacker.
You want your big, tough guys. They've got to be stout at the point of attack, stack the run well, which basically means they have to be able to meet offensive linemen head-on, stay on their feet, slide off the block, get to the play. Then you're obviously looking for tackle technique. You don't want guys that grab tackle. You want guys that square into ball carriers, wrap up, and bring ball carriers down at the point of contact. If they're having their tackles broken, if running backs are picking up yards off initial contact, that's not a good thing. Two of the better fundamentally sound, technically sound tacklers that I've seen go from the college level to the NFL would be David Harris of the New York Jets and Patrick Willis of the San Francisco 49ers. Willis, when he came out of Mississippi, really was a big hitting guy who would intimidate opponents, stop them dead in the open field. That's what you want to see. It's not just about going up the field. It's about getting outside the box, wrapping up the guy, and bringing him down to the point of attack. Well, Patrick Willis and David Harris did that well in college and translated it into NFL success.
And I think so much of it, forgetting all schemes, taking on blocks, what are your take-on skills, and then what are your tackling skills? And if you excel in both of those areas, we'll find a place for you to play. And sometimes it might even be initially early in a career covering kicks as a special teams guy.
And then there's a speed element involved.
Especially in today's game that is so pass-happy, you need to be able to run and cover and be on the field in third down.
Even teams that run the ball, like Seattle, San Francisco, when it's long yardage, everybody goes three wide, four wide. They spread. They bring backs in who are receiving backs, who can get down the field. So now you need linebackers who are specific role players. Now, some guys can stay on the field, but there are certain linebackers, they have to come off the field because they're not quite athletic enough to play in the pass game.
The box guys, we keep talking about, they may be phased out as we continue to go along if we're going to continue to play the game. If the pace continues to pick up, like the Eagles helped usher in this year, if we continue to go and play at that pace, maybe those big guys aren't on the field nearly as much. Used to be that was the big pride thing as a middle line. I don't come off the field no matter what. Harder to do the more we spread things out and the smaller we get. If you look at the combine, the defensive guys have gotten smaller over the years. A lot of times now in college, they're overblown strong safeties in a lot of ways. Guys that are 220 to 215, 220, 225 pounds who can run, play on the backside, run and chase guys, make plays in the passing game, things of that nature.
So you have specific linebackers. They may not get drafted high. They may not be first or second round picks. But just like we talk about slot receivers becoming more and more critical to offenses, you may not draft a pure slot receiver in the first round, but there are going to be specific linebackers who are used in certain roles, third and long, because they can cover, they can run, they can play sideline to sideline. That's where the game is going now.
All right, good stuff there from the wide array of scouts and myriad draft experts for the Scouts Notebook feature. A little ending by Greg Cosell, who will join us, I think, later this month in Journey to the Draft podcast. And we've also got the Film Room series coming up on the Draft Prospects.
Starting this week. It was good stuff from you guys last week. So those will start going up Wednesday or Friday.
All right. And then we turn our attention to the fan questions for our man, Brian Baldinger. Brian, first question comes from Blaze Massiantonio. I hope I'm doing that justice. Okay. He wants to know what you think of Shane Scove, the inside linebacker from Stanford.
Well, very productive player, Blaze. I said earlier in this podcast. I'm trying to get the term right.
Journey to the Draft presented by AAA.
Well, I said if you want to evaluate any Pac-12 player on offense, watch him against Stanford's defense. I mean, it's a very sophisticated defense. It's a very good tackling defense. But Shane Scove is an inside linebacker for Stanford. Incredibly productive player. I think he missed 1 year with an injury, if I'm not mistaken, or at least much of a season with an injury. But he came back last year, had a monster season. I think he's a 3-4 inside linebacker. I don't think he's a middle linebacker. I don't think he has that kind of range. But I think he's a true 3-4 inside linebacker in this league. I think probably in the third or fourth round, you'll see Shane Scove go off. And only because, you know, he can't run the way a Michael Kendricks can run. But I think he's going to take good angles. He's going to be smart. He understands the game. He's going to be a student of the game. You're never going to have to worry about him at night. I think there's a lot of reasons why you'd want Shane Scove on your team.
I mean, from an instinct standpoint, I mean, off the charts. You know, his instincts, maybe comparable to Chris Borland from Wisconsin.
That's
another similar guy who's, you know, doesn't have all the physical tools you want. He's not a really explosive kid. He's more of a one-speed, try-hard guy, high motor, but, you know, knows how to sift through traffic. Can find the ball in the run game, and just a really smart, instinctual player. The knee is going to be the question with him and how far he ultimately falls. But, I mean, if he could stay healthy, he should be a quality NFL player.
All right, Chris Most on Twitter wants to know if there's a wide receiver who you think fits Nick Foles' playing style.
Well, I mean, they just lost maybe the fastest wide receiver, you know, in the league. So, I mean, Paul Richardson at Colorado has that type of speed. Now, I don't know, like, until he plays in the NFL, I don't know if he could play as fast as he did at Colorado, but this guy is a blazer. So he's probably a second-round pick. Deshaun was a second-round pick. If you just want to replace speed, because if you're trying to stretch a team vertically and horizontally, Paul Richardson could do that.
Richardson's obviously, I mean,
he's the speed. He's the burner of the draft.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and he has shown the ability to be a good route runner. Now, he doesn't do it consistently. He showed the ability to know how to get on top of defenders, can separate at the top of his stem, and shows, you know, the ability to do that. It's a matter of doing it consistently. Had some drops on tape, but he's capable of making crazy one-handed grabs as well. So I think consistency is the big thing you're looking for.
The only thing I'd say about Richardson, you have to, when you watch these guys, I mean, they didn't have a quarterback at Colorado.
No.
I don't know when the last time they had a quarterback there. I mean, I did games there 3 years ago. It was the worst. And Paul was on the team, but that was the worst quarterback situation, maybe the worst team that in all of college football.
Sounds like Wake Forest to me.
A little bit. I mean, sometimes when you evaluate these guys, you have to like realize they don't have a guy that can get you the ball.
I mean, would you say Cordell Stewart was probably the
probably? Yeah, might have to go back to Cordell. I don't know. What's the guy that was here? that played at Colorado right after Cordell. Detmer.
Ah,
McCoy. McCoy was.
There you go.
Well, he was a Colorado guy.
Wasn't Ty? I think Ty was the Colorado.
Ty Detmer was BYU.
He was BYU.
Yeah, but, okay. Yeah. But his brother.
I think Coy Detmer was.
Coy was,
was
Colorado.
Colorado
guy.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
look this up.
The other thing, obviously.
I think I'm pretty right about that. Yeah. I should have stumbled at first, but I shouldn't get that wrong.
I mean, Rich is the other thing. Obviously, he's 178 pounds soaking wet. So, I mean, that'll be the one thing you're going to worry about with him. So, no, Richardson's an interesting kid.
I mean, if you're just trying to replace speed, then that would be a legitimate guy to replace speed. But I think the Eagles want to do more than just replace speed. I think they want bigger players.
Serves me right, of course, for even deigning to question you about Coy Detmer, but of course he did go to Colorado. I've also got Craig Ox and Bobby Pesavento. Remember those guys?
No.
All right. Well, that tells
you. Just talking about a program that has been like literally wiped off the map.
That's right. All right. The last question comes to us from Mark LeBlanc, and he wants to know what you think about Aaron Murray, the Georgia quarterback, who now, speaking of draft buzz, he is going to throw at the Georgia Pro Day only a few months after tearing his ACL. So an interesting guy to watch here.
Well, Mark, I'll be flat out honest, and I've been on record now for over a month. He's my favorite quarterback in this draft.
Wow.
Now, why is that? Well, first of all, he started 52 games at Auburn. He beat out Zach Mettenberger, who may get drafted in front of him because he's bigger and stronger and got a stronger arm. But if you just want to see a guy that flat out knows how to play the position and is tough, I mean, you watch Aaron Murray against Auburn. Dee Ford literally must have KO'd him five times, where he's throwing the ball and he's getting a rib shot from Dee Ford. I mean, nobody could block Dee Ford at Georgia. So he knows how to take a hit. He brings Georgia back on the road at Auburn this year, down 21 points in the fourth quarter and scores three touchdowns. Can make literally, there's no hesitation. He knows exactly where to go. He reads safeties. He reads coverage. He knows how to move in the pocket. I mean, he looks, I mean, this is ridiculous, but he reminds you of Drew Brees. He just does. Like, he's a flat-out winner. And I know at Georgia, Mark Richt, you know, takes a lot of heat. They can't beat Alabama. They can't win the SEC championship, all that stuff. But they didn't have a single receiver at Georgia. I mean, they have nobody. And they didn't have any offensive linemen at Georgia. And their defense, even last year's defense, that was supposed to be all world with all these guys that got drafted, they were giving up 30 points a game. They're always playing from behind. There's nothing that I see from Aaron Murray that he can't do at this level.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for this week's Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Baldy, once again, thanks so much for
my pleasure, Bo. Fran?
Coming into the studio while Chris McPherson enjoys beautiful Orlando, Florida.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Getting Chris back in the studio next week, it'll be exciting to hear. He's driving back from Florida with his family. Have you ever made a drive that long?
Yeah, I have.
With a group that big?
No, not with a family. I've made the drive, though.
Yeah, I can do it by myself if I'm listening to a podcast by myself. Or
the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. Presented by AAA.
Right.
But with the kids in the back, that's a lot of rest stops.
No, that's too much for me.
That's tough. All right, well, thanks once again for joining us. We're going to see if we can get Baldy to unload a few frequent flyer miles onto Fran and myself. But until then, we will see you next week on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.